order to get up to the stock taking if you're interested. I don't know. Você prefere que fale em português ou em espanhol? Ou em inglês? Ok. Então, bom. Ah, perfeito, sim. Busca-los. A gente pode começar? Bueno, no sé si necesita el micrófono. Tal vez un poco. Lo que yo les... Hola, hola, yes. Bien, ¿y tú? ¿Ustedes ambos? Bueno, ¿tú entiendes? ¿Tú también enseñas español? ¿Cómo? ¿Un poco? Ah, de Perú. Entonces, ah, bien, perfecto. Bueno, nos hablamos español más fácil entonces. Bueno, empecemos a ver, no sé si ustedes quieren correr para el stock taking, entonces lo que yo les quería presentar es este ejercicio que hicimos en el marco de la CEPAL. La CEPAL es el Secretariado de Naciones Unidas para América Latina y el Caribe, ¿no? Y los países nos han preguntado en varias ocasiones de acompañarles en la cumbre mundial, en elaborar una visión de América Latina y el Caribe para la región. Ahí nació este plan de acción, el ILAC 2007, que básicamente es una priorización de las metas de la cumbre mundial. Así los países crearon 30 metas, 30 prioridades, con 70 actividades, para ser implementado hasta 2017. Y la idea era entonces, bueno, en la cumbre mundial entonces había, ustedes conocen, el plan de acción ahí hay 186 metas que deben ser cumplidas hasta 2015. Ahora, bueno, ningún hacedor de política le encanta primero se ha enfrentado con 166 compromisos y segundo, ninguno se emociona a trabajar para 2015 porque, número uno, es muy probable que nadie va a estar a mando en este año, menos que tal vez Fidel Castro, que todavía va a seguir ahí, pero la mayoría del resto, digamos, no se emociona mucho pensar en 2015. Es un problema que tenemos en Naciones Unidas, ¿no? Con las metas de milenio, con todos esos compromisos que todo el mundo dice, bueno, ya, mi sucesor lo va a hacer. Entonces, lo que se hizo en América Latina, nos priorizamos en las 30 primeras metas hasta 2007, este era el ILAC 2007, y ahí ir paso a paso hasta 2015, ¿no? Y ahora se está discutiendo este el ILAC 2010, que es el próximo paso, y ahí más probablemente un ILAC 2015 o 13, bueno, hay que ir paso a paso, ¿no? Entonces, nosotros, en base del ILAC 2007, hicimos una... Queríamos ayudar a los países a definir las prioridades para los próximos años, para 2010. Hola. ¿Tú entiendes español? Perfecto. Y ahí de enfrente, si estás entonces con la pregunta que quieres hacer las prioridades de política, nuevo plan de acción para 2010, no te enfrentas con la pregunta básica, ¿quién está en la mejor posición de definir las políticas públicas en TICS para América Latina? Tú, básicamente, esta pregunta es tan viejo que la pregunta de la gobernanza en general, ¿no? Una pregunta es que tomamos un grupo muy pequeño, en el extremo es una persona que decide qué es el mejor para toda la sociedad, ¿no? En los viejos tiempos, esta persona era asignado por poderes superiores, se lo llamó rey, que tenía entonces la bendición directa, y él, como era el rey, con la bendición directa del Señor, él decidió dónde va la sociedad, porque él tenía esta sabiduría, ¿no? Después se empezó a decir, bueno, tal vez este señor no sabemos si realmente es el mejor que sabe, y empezó el cuento de democracia, y dice, bueno, abrimos la cosa un poco, ¿no? En un grupo más amplio, o en el extremo que todo el mundo decide. Bueno, desde cuando el pueblo de Atenas mató a Sócrates, esta cosa con la democracia total no perdió un poco de ser la moda, ¿no? Y se volvió una cosa entre media. La democracia representativa, es decir, que todos eligen los mejores del pueblo, los más sabios, y ellos con su sabiduría, ¿no? Deciden en el nombre del pueblo qué es el mejor, cuáles son las prioridades de la política, dónde queremos ir, qué sociedad queremos ser, y se inventó la democracia representativa, ¿no? James Madison, uno de los padres de este concepto, en este famoso Federalist Paper número 10, él dice, bueno, you have to refine and enlarge the public view by passing it through a chosen body of citizens who are the wisest men of the country, bla, bla. Y ahí se inventó este concepto. Tú básicamente quieres todavía en este trade-off entre estos dos extremos, ¿no? Tú puedes hacer un planteamiento muy tecnocrático. Buenas días. ¿Entiendes español? Más o menos. Buenos días. ¿Tú entiendes español? ¿O inglés? ¿Portugués? ¿Qué mejor? Whatever. Bueno, si no entienden, tienen que avisarme y ahí voy a cambiar al alemán y no hay ningún problema. Entonces, básicamente tú te encuentras con eso, ¿no? Si quieres elaborar una agenda de políticas, te encuentras en este extremo. O lo haces en un grupo pequeño, en los más sabios, o preguntas todo el pueblo. Abres la discusión y que todos deciden sobre eso, ¿no? Y básicamente para decidir qué planteamiento estamos haciendo, tú tienes que, en la Sociedad de Información para América Latina, nosotros consideramos primero las prioridades, las particularidades de las TICs y segundo las particularidades de nuestra región, de América Latina. Las particularidades de las TICs, son primero, es una tecnología de propósito general, como sabemos, es decir, se puede utilizar para cualquier actividad humana, como la electricidad, como la máquina de combustión interna, ¿no? Y nos lo puedes utilizar para mejorar la gestión de desastres naturales, tal como para la eficiencia y productividad de las pymes, tal como para la educación y para la inclusión de género y para, ¿no? Es cualquier cosa, bueno, donde existe información, que es cualquier conducta humana, ahí las TICs pueden ser utilizadas. Entonces, si consideras eso, buenos días. Es lo de la. Sí, adelante. Entonces, si consideras eso, digamos, es muy poco probable que un grupo reducido de expertos o el experto tenga toda la información que es mejor que hacer con las TICs, ¿no? Porque las aplicaciones son tan amplias que ahí se reduce la probabilidad. Número dos, particularidades de las TICs son, tienen un ritmo de innovación acelerado, están acelerando la verdad, el ritmo de innovación. Que es una cosa bastante jurídica para la política pública, porque tú tienes ciclos de innovación tan rápido, como, por ejemplo, la famosa ley de Moore, ¿no? Que seguramente conocen, que cada 2 años se duplica más o menos, bueno, se duplica la densidad en las chips, que significa se duplica más o menos hola, buenos días. ¿Entiende español? ¿Entiende español?
Sí.
Ay, perfecto, porque decidimos de hablar en castellano aquí. Buenos días. Entonces, si consideran la ley de Moore, ¿no? Si hay un crecimiento exponencial, ¿qué significa eso? Si se duplica la capacidad computacional cada cierto año, serán cada 2, 3, 4 años, no es tan importante. La cosa complicada es que se duplica, crecimiento exponencial, que son esas curvas que crecen así, hitting the wall, como dicen en inglés, ¿no? Es básicamente, si tú ves el progreso tecnológico desde 71, si ustedes se recuerdan cómo era la computación en 71, bueno, yo no lo recuerdo, tal vez. A mí me contaron, pero en 71 básicamente cuando inventaron el microchip era una pantalla azul, ¿no? Que esto es del del Xerox de Palo Alto, estas máquinas. Y bueno, y 30 años más tarde, tenemos 10 millones de personas viviendo una Second Life en realidades virtuales tres dimensionales. Entonces, el progreso técnico de estos 30 años lo vamos a ver en los próximos 2 años de nuevo, porque se va a duplicar la capacidad computacional. Significa que todo lo que hemos hecho en los últimos 30 años, lo mismo ahora vamos a ver en los próximos 2 años. Esta es la implicancia de cosas como la ley de Moore. Significa, si tú no quieres imaginar cómo será la computación en 2 años, tienes que ponerte en el año 71 e imaginarte cómo será en 2005. Yo no sé si en 71 alguien se imaginó lo que habrá Second Life. Pero si hubiera alguien que los hubiera imaginado, esta persona tendría la misma capacidad de predecirnos ahora lo que pasa en 2010. ¿No? Eso básicamente es la implicancia del ritmo de innovación acelerado del crecimiento exponencial de las TICs, y lo hace muy difícil, pero muy difícil hacer políticas públicas. Especialmente porque si haces políticas, van a tener el impacto en 2 o 3, 4 años, y bueno, ahí el mundo ya ha movido. Significa encontrar el camino óptimo hacia la sociedad de la información es casi imposible, porque cuando tú crees que lo has encontrado, el mundo ya ha cambiado y ya no estás en el camino óptimo, ¿no? Entonces es muy difícil hacer políticas públicas ahí. Y ahí de nuevo la pregunta, ¿quién es mejor entonces en la mejor situación en decirnos cuál es la agenda de política pública? ¿El experto, el super experto o el rey, el planteamiento tecnocrático? ¿O mejor preguntamos a un grupo más amplio? Nosotros de nuevo decimos, bueno, si nos equivocamos, entonces por favor equivocámonos todos, preguntamos entonces más ampliamente y veremos cuál es la agenda. Número 2, las particularidades de América Latina. También hay que considerar en esta pregunta con quién elaboro la agenda de política pública, ¿no? Tecnocrática o democráticamente. En América Latina sabemos que en una cosa somos campeones mundiales, que es la desigualdad. Entonces hay una heterogeneidad muy, muy fuerte. Buenos días. ¿Entiende español? Perfecto. es la heterogeneidad, ¿no? Tú tienes por un lado la desigualdad más grande del mundo, entonces tienes segmentos de la sociedad latinoamericana que ya viven en el primer mundo, o más allá de eso, ¿no? La persona más rica del mundo, mucho más rico que las sheikhs en el Medio Oriente, es latinoamericana, ¿no? Slim en México. Entonces, sí, tenemos la gente más rica del mundo y tenemos también los más pobres del mundo. Entonces, la desigualdad es bastante, bueno, es bastante característica para nuestra región. Y también la heterogeneidad entre diferentes países. Tú tienes países como un país más grande del mundo, ¿no? Con 180 millones de habitantes, y tienes San Kitts y Nevis, que son 40 mil habitantes, que es básicamente un edificio ahí, ¿no? Que también es un país. Y bueno, ¿quién decide cuáles son las prioridades políticas para en esta región que nosotros tenemos aquí? De nuevo, será una persona o un grupo chico de tecnócratas, de los expertos, los más sabios, que pueden decidir qué es bueno, pero no. Nosotros dijimos, bueno, también mejor consultamos más ampliamente y discutimos entre todos nosotros cuáles podrían ser las prioridades. Y otra particularidad de América Latina es, duele decirlo, yo también soy economista y duele decir eso, pero el progreso técnico para nosotros es exógeno. No producimos las TICs. Para nosotros las TICs caen como maná del cielo y decimos, why Max, mire quién hubiera sido. Bueno, en las laboratorios del norte ya sabían hace 10, 15 años que viene why Max. ¿Por qué? Porque lo desarrollaron. Digamos, el why Max no cayó del cielo, alguien lo planificó hace 10 años y lo desarrolló y apuntó a las necesidades, a las demandas que tenían ellos allá en Europa, en Etsy o en Estados Unidos, y desarrollaron why Max. Nosotros aquí, como no estamos en el proceso de producir tecnología, para nosotros es una sorpresa, mire, una nueva tecnología. Entonces, como no producimos tecnologías para nuestras necesidades y como nos caen, como nos sorprenden, este básicamente son las implicancias del progreso técnico exógeno. Entonces, este aumenta mucho de incertidumbre además. Entonces, resumimos las particularidades de las TICs en América Latina. Número 1. Es una tecnología que puede servir para cualquier conducta humana. Las aplicaciones son tan amplias como, bueno, crean una nueva sociedad, ¿no? La sociedad de la información. Número 2, el crecimiento exponencial de las TICs, que te aumenta la incertidumbre, tendrías que ser Nostradamus para poder prever lo que pasa en los próximos 2 años, ¿no? Número 3, Somos muy desiguales en la región. Y número cuatro, además, ni tenemos esta tecnología bajo nuestro control. Buen día. ¿Usted entiende español? English? Portuguese? Okay. So we switch to English. So, and the exogenous technological progress, which really, well, increases the uncertainty even more. So, at the end, we in ECLAC decided, well, it might be better to consult with a much larger group of stakeholders and to see, well, among all of us, to share the responsibility of creating a future agenda, because the probability that a small group of experts, even if they are the most expert of the most experts, the probability that they will have all the necessary information and knowledge to decide on the faith and to decide in this field of progress is very low. So that's why we came to the conclusion that we, at least inside ECLAC, we do not have this knowledge and we do not have these capacities. So we decided to open up this process to discuss a future agenda for 2010. The methodology which we chosen is Adelphi. What Adelphi basically does is it is doing consecutive rounds of consultation with a larger group of people or experts. So first of all, you consult them, you get the opinion poll, the opinion of this group of experts. Then you present them with the same results, and you ask them again. And then you present them in the third round with the same results of the previous round, and then you ask them again. The effect of why you're doing that is when people see the opinions of the others, they reconsider their own opinion, and they change their opinion, creating a consensus. Because you might see, well, maybe I'm a little bit alone, or maybe the other ones have a point there, and you see the opinions, and you start to create, on the one hand, consensus, and on the other hand, really, you start to polarize, and you create the dissents. So you start to know, people start to, well, that's what deliberation is, right? That's what reasoning is. You're confronted with opinions of the others, and you reconsider your own opinion. That has been very successful in this exercise. For example, I can tell you in the first round, issues like, for example, digital disaster management, so the use of ICT for disaster management, are of course much more important in the Caribbean and in Central America than in South America. Now, we decided that we will only take the 30 first priorities, because the old action plan had only 30 priorities, and disaster management in the first round came in place number, I think, 35. So it wouldn't have stayed in the priority agenda of the future. It would have fallen out. Why? Well, the Caribbean and Mesoamerica and Central America, they evaluated it very high. It was like in rank two or three of among the five highest ranks with them in the Caribbean, but it was number 40 something in South America. They really didn't really care for that. It was not a priority. So in the second round, when the South American participants were confronted with that fact that it really is important for Central America and for the Caribbean, they seemed to reconsider that. And with their ranking, it raised up to number, I think, 30 or 29. And as an effect overall, this digital disaster management issue stayed into the priority and is right now in one of the priorities. So basically, that's why you're doing this Delphi in the consecutive rounds, right? You ask the people, you confront them with their own opinion, and so they reconsider it and create and strengthen a consensus. So that's basically what the Delphi method is. We did five Delphi rounds. Three online and two offline. Here you can see the contributions of the online contributions. There have been 1,274 online contributions. We have been very surprised with that. When we started this exercise, we thought, well, maybe the most utopic goal would be to have 500 participants, but it turned out much more successful. The most surprising thing is that, as you can see here, two-thirds of them have a doctor or a master degree. I did not know that so many educated people are really here working for ICT and development in our region, but these are almost 1,000 people who really took their time, took an hour or more than an hour to really answer this questionnaire. That means they really care for ICT for development in Latin America. So this seems it worked. It also worked, the auto-selection auto-selection criteria. We did not have a list of people, so we just diffused the questionnaire with 7,000 contacts. and the snowball effect came in. So, but this result that two-thirds have a doctor and master degrees tells us that we really also got people who seem to work and know this field. The participation of the different sectors have been very representative. As you can see, 40% have been from the private sector, 25 from the public sector, 25 from the academic sector. So it shows that also these online participation tools have been very effective, really, to bring in a variety of stakeholders. Well, with regard to gender, you can see that the ICT for development community is dominated by males. Two-thirds are males, one-third have been women. And with regard to the sub-region, very interesting that it has been very representative. That's the real population. So 67% are from of the population of our region is from South America, and that 69% have been participating. So it's been very representative, even more so if you see that the Caribbean, who is usually an excluded region, who usually always claim that, well, they cannot come to the events because they cannot participate, they cannot make their voice heard because they don't have the resources and they don't have connections, flight connections, and so forth. They used very effectively this online participation tools, and they are even, well, a little bit overrepresented. I mean, 8% of our participants have been from the Caribbean, even though they only represent 7% of the population in Latin America. So that has worked very successfully. We have to thank all of these agencies here. They helped us to distribute the questionnaire, and that was a very, very good collaboration. So what did we do in the first round? In the first round, we confronted our participants with the 30 priorities of ELAC 2007. ELAC 2007 has 30 priorities, which have been defined on a much more technocratic approach in the first phase in 2004-2005. They have been defined basically, well, to tell you the truth, I wrote the first draft version, and then we sent it to the governments, they discussed it, and then they approved it. So basically, well, I had, in some point, the responsibility to do the first draft version, then the 30 governments discussed it in a limited scope, and that is what is now the ICT Priority Action Plan for Latin America. I was so shocked with that, that is such a small group who was discussing that now we decided to open it. So first of all, we confronted the stakeholders with these 30 priorities, and they ranked them in the first and the second round, basically. What came out of the first of the second round, that's not the result of the first round, but of the second round as well, is that of the 30 priorities, in the first round they also had the opportunity to add new priorities. For example, they added priorities as ICT in agriculture or other aspects. So as the result of the second round, of the 30 priorities, 23 stayed the same and 7 changed. Very interesting, the ones that lost importance. For example, as you know, in the World Summit, we have been discussing that topic a lot, free and open source software, and this topic a lot, internet governance. Now, internet governance came in priority number 43, I guess. So it's really the ICT. Well, the question was, which policy areas have the largest impact for information society development in Latin America and the Caribbean for 2010? And what the expert told us, that internet governance really does not have the largest importance for the largest impact, not important, but the impact for 2010 at least. Free and open source software, neither. And they said other areas have much more impact, really asking for impact, like e-democracy, civil participation, e-commerce, telemedicine, gender perspective, intellectual property, and voice over IP. Now you have different interpretations of this opinion of the public. One might be, well, the ICT for development community is pretty much fed up with internet governance and open source software discussions and so forth, so they just have other priorities now. Another interpretation is you could just say, well, the priorities changed somehow. For example, if you see free and open source software fall out, but intellectual property came in. So basically, you could say, well, that's pretty much the same discussion. However, what the experts tell you is you just need to open the scope of this discussion, and you need to talk about intellectual property beyond free and open source software. The other one is internet governance fell out, but civil participation and e-democracy came in. So we all know, basically, a lot of the e-government discussion is around this issue. So they said, well, don't only go to to internet governance, open it up to a wider scope and talk about multi-stakeholder participation in all of ICT policies. The same with alternative technologies fallout, but voice over IP came in. So it might be just the reformulation, what these experts are suggesting us in the reprioritization. However, it also is important to see that after 3 years, about a fourth of the policy priority changed. That is proof of the fast innovation cycle we have in ICT, and that it's really not adequate to make policy agenda for the next 10 or 15 years. That you really need to revise your policy agenda every 2 or 3 years because priorities are changing. So basically, that is also proof of this expectation we had. Well, in the second round, then we consolidated these priorities, and that is basically, these are the top priorities you can see here. So these are the ones, the six top priorities people have voted for. The first is connectivity in school and connectivity for local governments. So, well, basically what the ICT for Development community is telling us, if you really want to have impact of the information society until 2010, you should focus on connecting the schools and the municipalities instead of keeping on spending resources on talking about internet governance, free and open source software, all of these elusive discussions which take up most of the effort, right? So they say, well, impact is connectivity in schools and government and municipalities, training for SMEs and the workforce, electronic government and national strategies, that means to coordinate all of these policies. This basically gives a very coherent picture. It basically tells us that on the one hand, you still need in Latin America connectivity for public institutions. So public institutions such as schools and municipalities still require a lot of effort to be connected. In the economy, it seems, connectivity is already pretty much, well, if not solved, at least the worries are not so large anymore. But what you need in the economy is training. You need to capacitate the workforce, you need to capacitate entrepreneurs of small and medium-sized enterprises. Then with regard to applications, the government itself should lead by digitizing its processes. That is very different to other regions. For example, if you read the e-Europe and the European agenda, it's e-commerce, 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 e-business, and then others, and then e-government is like the last application. It's more like e-business incentivates e-government. That's what they tell you in Europe. And here in Latin America, they're saying, no, it's the government that should lead with an example. The government should digitize the processes. And that's basically what's happening. In many of our countries, the first transaction somebody makes is with the government. It is to pay taxes or the enterprises to do the e-procurement on the e-procurement pages. So that's the first transaction they make with the government. And then this virtual circle of breaking the cultural barriers of making transactions is kind of broken, and we go to e-commerce, e-business, and so forth. But the leading application, very different to the north, for us in Latin America seems to be e-government. And then the coordination of all of these public policies in national strategies. What was very surprising is the degree of consensus. Well, you can find all of these details in the report on our webpage, so you can also see the differences between regions, between countries, between gender, between educational level, what do they say? Very interesting to see out the public opinion structure of the ICT community in Latin America. Summing up, we were very surprised by the consensus. Of course, there are differences. I mean, the Caribbean has other priorities than Brazil and Chile has. Also, Chile has other priorities than Nicaragua has. Obviously, that's no surprise. However, at the end, we were very surprised that these six priorities have been priorities of almost all countries, independently of gender of the participant, of educational level of the participant, and where they come from. So there has been a very large and significant consensus about this priority agenda. Now, so we knew what are the most important areas. We know that connectivity of schools is the number one priority for Latin America during the next 3 years. So what? So we have the opportunity once again to write well. We want to connect all the schools, or we go a little bit further and elaborate more concrete policy options. So what we did is we got on different planes and we interviewed, I think it was 106 policymakers. In the majority, these have been public policymakers, but also private policymakers and from civil society from, I think, 16 countries of our region. I think 4 from the Caribbean, 4 from South America, 4 from Andean, and 4 from Central America. So we distributed that very evenly. And we elaborated policy options. With regard to policy options, basically you have two ways to elaborate a policy option. One is that, and that was inspired in the previous action plan, one is you quantify them. You have results-oriented policy options. You say, we want to connect half of all schools until 2010. What does that imply? That implies that I fix the goal that's result-oriented, and everybody can reach that goal however he or she wants. I mean, every country can choose the way. You can connect the school. You have a million ways to connect 50% of the school, so you do not really tell them what to do. You just sign a commitment that in 2010 we want to get there. So you have a number, you have a quantifiable goal, a results-oriented goal, and everybody is implementing that, but it's just a common goal we have. The other way are action-oriented goals, and here because not all policy options are quantifiable, right? So here you do not say where you want to go, but you say what you want to do. For example, to exchange best practices. It would be very artificial to quantify these kind of goals. You could say, well, we want to exchange 24 best practices. No, it doesn't really work. So you, if they're not quantifiable, however, you have the typical problem of political declaration and action plans and government action plans, that you have a lot of activities. We want to do that and that and that and that. And once they're approved, they get under the table, and there they are, and it says we want to do that and that and that. So what we said, if we have a non-quantifiable goal, if we have an action-oriented goal, we only accept suggestions for action-oriented goals if there are really institutions existing in the region who are working on that. For example, now we have the action-oriented goal to exchange best practices and experiences in e-government. Very nice goal. So tell us who's working on that. And so people start to identify, well, the Inter-American Development Bank is working on that. The ICAR from Canada is working on that. The United Nations is working on that. The Organization of American States is working on that. We said, okay, well, that's enough. So that's really, we seem that somebody is doing there, and this seems a reasonable goal. We also enlisted these agencies, and that provides governments with the possibility to do a follow-up and to see really what has been done after these years. So basically there are two simple rules we put to ourselves to elaborate policy issues, policy options. One, they have to be measurable. And two, if they're not measurable, they need to have some kind of responsible. They need to have somebody behind who can be asked what's going on, somebody to implement that. And there have been much very creative suggestions about what we want to do and we want to do this and that, but we did not find anybody in the region who could do this and that, so we did not accept them. And that's basically that was basically our filter to assure, first of all, that the policy plan is realistic and that it reflects the priorities and the activity that's ongoing in Latin America and the Caribbean, right? So these have basically been the two rules we put to ourselves during the interviews we made with these more than 100 people in order to elaborate the policy options. We then came up with 100 policy options. And these 100 policy options we once again put on our webpage for evaluation. And we ask once again the people, well, what will be the impact for 2010 for this or that policy option? If there have been quantifiable goals, for example, we want to connect 50% of schools, we also ask them about the number. So we ask them about, well, what percent of schools do you think you can connect in Nicaragua? And what percent of schools you think you can connect in Chile? So they also we also received a feedback on the situation, and they provided us with this. The results have been, well, these 100 policy options, we cut them at 70 because 70 because the former action plan ELAC 2007 had 70 goals. So we cut them at 70. We saw that there was a possibility for merger among some of them, so we sticked at the end with 65, and we came up with six chapters. Education, which had 7 goals, infrastructure and access, which has 13 goals, health, 8 goals, public management, 15 goals, the largest one, productive sector, 13 goals, public policy instrument and strategies, 9 goals. The sequence of this chapter is according to the way they have been classified. So education, all education policies received the highest amount of votes. Then once again, so we had this priority agenda, and we gathered in a fifth phase, we gathered 56 institutions, especially these institutions that have been identified. You know, the Inter-American Development Bank and the Organization of American States and the UNESCO and the APC, Civil Society Network, and Alfaredi. And so we invited all of them and told them, look, you have been identified. People say you are doing something here. And we gathered them in Santiago de Chile for one day, and we revised the results of the Delphi with them. And these people, they made a, here you can see the distribution, 31 of the organizations have been intergovernmental, 16 from the private sector, 14 civil society, and 11 from the academic sector. And they gave us some suggestions on how to change the some of the goals, to reformulate some of the goals. Because now here, once again, we come back, and with that I would like to finish, we come back to the question which I asked at the beginning. Who is in the best position to determine the policy priorities and the policy agenda for ICT in Latin America until 2010? Is it a small group of experts, the wise men, as medicine called them, right? Or is it all society? Now, this question is still, even after this experiment of 1.5 year, which we have been working on that, and here's the truth, I'm not really sure about which way to go and which way always to opt for. For example, when we presented the results of this Delphi in Buenos Aires at an intergovernmental meeting, and we told the 30 governments which we gathered there, we told them, well, that is what the ICT for development community in Latin America thinks. These are the priorities. Here you have the 65 policy priorities, 1,500 contributions, big consensus. So that's the way what the multi-stakeholder community thinks, that's the way to go. Some governments got up, and that was very interesting, got up and said, well, thank you very much, that's very important information. But you always have to consider that asking the wider public is not really, maybe not always the best choice, because, well, actually, on a theoretical point of view, you know, Max Weber, the father of social science, he famously said that the people themselves, they cannot think until the day after tomorrow. If you would leave the people to do politics, they would declare war at 8 o'clock in the morning, then they would make peace at 10 when the first coopers has come home. At 12:30 they would declare war again, and at 12:30, if you would leave the public to decide about public budget, you would be bankrupt all the time. So there are some things really you're not sure you want to ask the public, because if you want to ask the public, they will answer you, but they will answer you really with what they really want right now. And the governments in Buenos Aires, they had a very interesting anecdote to explain that, and that was, you know, when the, of course, governments got very annoyed with the fact that internet governance fall out. So internet governance fall out of the priority, it has not been part of the priority, and they said, well, you know, when Columbus first came to the Americas, there's this famous anecdote that the indigenous people of the Americas, they did not see the boats. They could not see the boats, even so they were in front of the shore for many weeks, but they could not see them because they've never seen something like that before. Their brain could just not capture what that is, So they did not see it. They saw some waves, some other things, and there are a lot of psychological studies on that, and say, well, it's true. Things you've never experienced before, it's difficult for you to see. So they did not see it until it was too late, right? We all know the results. When they got to the shore, things were too late. So it can be very dangerous if you don't see things. And basically what government experts said in Buenos Aires is internet governance might be the same thing. Not many people might see the importance of it right now, because it's kind of like the boats of the Spanish and the Portuguese in front of the shore. You do not see them really, because you have never seen something like this before. However, it might be too late, and the killing and the results can be deadly if you do not really recognize and react to it. So asking the wider public is might not always be the best way to go forward. So at the end, you're again in the mix. Who is the one to decide for public policy priorities in a field of ICT, with all the particularities, the fast innovation cycles, the vast possibilities of application? Is it a small group? The probability that they have all the knowledge is very low. Or is it the wider public, which might not really see what is important and might opt for short-term goals, sacrificing long-term strategic importance? So basically, well, that's the result. I leave you with these questions. What will what's happening right now with the results of the Delphi is governments are right now discussing it. Of course, governments are the democratically elected representatives of the people, so they have the last word on that. Nobody elected me, for example, and nobody elected many other stakeholders. So it's really the governments who have to have the last word on that, and they're discussing it right now. And they will discuss it until February in order to be approved in a ministerial conference on the 6th and 8th of February in El Salvador. And, also, of course, the draft right now is on the webpage of El Salvador, ELAC2007.org. El Salvador is open to receive comments to it still, so you can write also comments to it. And it's still being discussed in order then to be approved in this ministerial conference. Okay, thank you very much for your attention. Any questions, comments, critics? Yes.
Thanks, Martin, for a very stimulating talk, which at least it woke me up. Thank you. I have a question. I mean, it all sounds great as an approach, and it just sounds like the right way to go about it, at least a very interesting and pragmatic one. How can you measure the effectiveness of all you're doing on what is actually happening in the countries? And of course, I'm talking about like a very heterogeneous region and everything, but how you have all these indicators that I believe you're measuring as well. How do you think it's best to like follow up what is being posed as a policy priorities, and I mean, what are governments doing after this? This doesn't seem to be more than, I mean, on the side of the policy options is great, but is this not compulsory for governments to follow? And are there any ways of forcing or somehow the governments to do the right thing?
Very good question. Well, that is another thing we are also working on. Of course, if you have such concrete goals, you have to see if there's really happening something. Basically, you have two things you have to measure here. First is how the region is advancing, for example, with the indicators and with the statistics. And the other things is what the region is doing. Of course, these two are in two different phases, because what you're doing right now might have an effect in 2 or 3 years. So you have to measure both of them at the same time. That's what we are basically doing. One is we call it internally the benchmarking. It's a monitoring report you can also download on our webpage. You have 141 graphs and tables inside here on the different goals of the regional action plan and how they're advancing. So of the 27 goals we have measured here, of the 27 areas during the last 3 years, we found out that there was advancement in 15 of them, especially a lot in access, and a standstill in 12 of them, especially in public in applications and public policies. So that has been the result. Actually, so you could see, well, the glass is half full, because we advanced in 15 against 12, but 15 against 12 is not really a victorious win. So so we on one hand, you have to measure the statistics. Here maybe I have to say a note on the statistics. We experienced that the ELAC action plan has been very successful in order to catalyze the creation of statistics. For example, there was this famous goal in the old action plan, which said that in 2007, we want to have one public ICT access center per 20,000 inhabitants. This discussion we had that with the governments, I remember there was like 3 hours, really a heavy discussion about why 20,000. So one access center per 20,000. Who says? Why 20,000? So all of the 30 governments that were sitting on the table, everybody did the calculation in his head, right? And the other one said, well, no, 20,000. No, we already passed that. No, 20,000. The other one said, no, we're never going to get there. So at the end, after 3 hours of discussion, they got to 20,000. Once that was approved, we started to make a count. So basically, what we did is we contracted 17 consultants all over the countries to make an estimation about the number of cyber cafes and public access center. And majorly, we counted only the public one, the public financed ones, not even the cyber cafes on the next corner. So all the big projects we counted. And we came up that in 2005, at the same time that this goal has been improved, there was one access center per 2,500 people. So at the same time the governments approved this goal, we already passed it 10 times. Basically, that shows you if we really make policies on a non-existing information basis, you make nonsense policies. We make nonsense policy goals. Now, the effect of that has been that many governments started to measure that phenomena. For example, now Brazil has an observatory for public access center. Dominican Republic has an observatory for public access center. Peru has one. So the country started to elaborate their own observatories to measure and observe this massive phenomenon which we have in Latin America and the Caribbean. Basically being incentivated by something like that, that somebody puts a number. However, I say, well, these governments, they made a mistake, they put 20,000, but that was very heroic. They dared to put a number. And that was the most effective thing, that they really dared to put a number, and that enabled and incentivated also the academy and the investigators to start to measure this phenomenon. So it was an heroic act of the Latin American governments to put numbers into an action plan, and has been very beneficial. And so right now, what many are doing, if you have a concrete action plan with numbers, you're also able to measure that. And then you create a positive cycle, becoming kind of like a serious policy making, that you really know what you do policies about, right? With most of the time you do not. And on the other hand, you're also measuring what's happening. So that's statistic, and the other thing, you have to measure what's happening with the projects and so forth. Here I represent you, Jennifer Ross. She's also working with our team in Santiago. So Jennifer's doing a newsletter every other month, something like that, to bring in articles what international agencies, civil society, and others are doing. Of course, what they are doing, that does not have an effect yet. That might have an effect in a couple of years, but it's also important to show the level of activity, right? So these are the two things I think we are doing. We have learned that, of course, from the European Union and other ones who are doing the same thing, and I think also now on the national level, many governments are starting to adopt this approach, right? To have concrete action plan with numbers, starting to measure it, and also to make observations on what's happening. That is very important because, well, the most important thing in ICT is to coordinate. As I say, it's a general purpose technology, and you have to coordinate the dispersed activities.
Well, thank you very much for the very interesting report about this unique practice. And my question is about the how the actual survey has done, because my question is about the interest of the many people necessarily represent the priority or not. People might have interest of everything in everything. So what is actually the question of the survey or the questionnaire was on your paper? And that leads my second question about the I actually attended some similar attempt done by the, for example, NSF and OECD related workshop for the future of the internet in this January. And or I am personally involved in the U-Japan, that ubiquitous Japan policies of the Japanese government. Each of them have a similar attempt to evaluate the priority of the issues in the future society. And each of both by the done by the experts, not the, the general people. So my question is your comment about which is better, the so many people from the general people or the some expert, which is a better way to evaluate it. And the, my third question is that the, this methodology is very powerful and very useful for the policymakers. I agree with that. So you were saying about the beginning of the policy making. And the, we, my idea is about applying your methodology or this Delphi method to the evaluation of the policies after they have, after a year or after several years of the launch of the some legislations or policies. So the cyclic improvement of the policies would be more than important the just beginning of this life cycle of the policies. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Very, very good question. One is noting that you have been working in that, in this foresight field. Of course, we have been, when we started this exercise, the first reference was the Japanese foresight, which is the most in all of these foresight studies, which this makes part of, right, to look into the future. The Japanese are doing that for many decades already, and it's like the most extensive and world reference on this. So we have been very inspired by this, by the Japanese work. The first question is crucial. What was the question we asked? We asked the question, what has the largest impact for development of information societies in 2010? So that was the question we asked. In the first two rounds, we separated that between economic impact, political impact, and social impact, which was very interesting. For example, in the first two rounds, people told, the result was that people said that access policies are much more important for social, to have a social impact, while training policies and training areas are much more, have a much larger economic impact. So at the first two rounds, we separated that in social impact, economic impact, and political impact, and that was basically the question we asked. Of course, you could be much more defined, but the questionnaire was already so long that we decided to just to stick to the impact. The second question is the impact that they think that, yeah, right. It's not the interest, yeah, it's the impact. The second question with the experts and with the larger community, the problem which, of course, if you do an Delphi, like yeah, you in Japan are mostly doing, and you have this large group of 2,000 experts, and you ask 2,000 experts. Ah, okay. But at least you have 100 experts. We did not have them. So to start to create this community as well, we sent the questionnaire to everybody we knew, and we did this auto selection criteria. We said, if somebody really takes an hour to answer this questionnaire, he might have real an interest into that, so he might be considered an expert in this ICT for development. The fact that two-thirds of them, 62%, had a doctor or master's degree pretty much confirmed that these people really knew what they were talking about, that they are pretty educated, and that they really, of course, are interested in that. Of course, I cannot not at all assure that some private sector company employed some 200 people to answer the questionnaire and to put in a bias. I cannot assure that. Could be. So, but there's no assurance for that. We did not make any quality control. However, I think no. Something like that did not happen. The private sector had priorities which were very much in line as well, and we did not detect any kind of manipulation there. So that was an auto-selection criteria. And then, of course, getting back to the governments, what we do right now. So right now, this draft is with the governments, and they can modify anything. So it's not, it's just the Delphi, it's not the political declaration automatically. And the third question was on the... in the future. Well, no, we just started it. Actually, when we started to design this exercise, we did research, of course, with the Japanese, and we also did research about foresight work in Latin America. We found some in Colombia, there are something, but Latin America doesn't really have a foresight culture, not as Asia or in Europe. You do not think 2 or 3 years into the future, and to imagine about that. There's no culture like that. We did not find a lot of studies to do future planning. So planning is very shortcut. So if we did not find anything and we just started that right now, we think it's a very important to do that, especially in a field of such rapid changes, ICT and technology. However, we will have to see in the future. Hopefully, we will be able to continue. I also have to thank very much that all of this was financed by the European Commission, who financed us this study. We also worked with the University of Manchester, very close with Professor Ian Miles, who's doing most of the foresights for Information Society and for the European Commission. So Professor Ian Miles helped us very much on that. We also hope that this will be possible in the future. However, as I said, that was a donation from the European Commission. There are not even funds in Latin America, and we were not able to convince people that this was important. So that was an experiment, and we hope to make it as well in the future to evaluate the impact.
Hi, my name is José Augusto. I run a small business internet company here in Rio, and I am totally a visitor here, and I was kind of astonished of how this meeting has no people from my world, you know, from my side, from a business side, even a small business side. And hearing about you, seeing the Brazilian almost continental reality as a giant country with such different spots and such different realities, and seeing how Brazilian government acts and how it shows itself to the outside, it's a foreign policy. I ask you, how can you? I wasn't in the very beginning of your exposure, so I apologize if you already answered this. But how can you measure the accuracy of what your feedback from the governments is real? How is your feedback from the government measured from the places in these countries? And how can your feedback from the different places not contaminate what the previous answer? For instance, you've been in Buenos Aires, and then you're going to San Salvador. There are two different locations, two different realities, and how this local feedback does not contaminate the whole answer.
Very good question. Actually, it's going back to the main question I have in the head all during the study, is and who is in the best situation. You said, basically, you're saying government's opinion contaminates the opinion of this expert group. We don't know who contaminates whom, right? Who has the knowledge about what is the best for all of us for the public policy agenda, right? We asked these 1,500 people, but nobody elected them. The government's official at least did the effort, a big effort, to stand in front of the people and let themselves elect. So they have the legitimization. And basically, that's all humankind invented until now, representative democracy. So they say, well, if you want to have the power to decide what is good for all of us, get yourself the legitimization of the people. Get yourself elected. Many people did so, they bothered to do so, and now they're elected, they have the legitimization, the people confine them, that they are the ones that should know. Well, and they have the right to do it. That's working, that's not working. Basically, that's all humankind invented until now. So at the end, the only way, the last decision of what is good and what is bad is with the people. And in a representative democracy, the people are represented by their representative governments. So these are the ones who at the end have to decide what's priority and what's not priority. So basically, that's what we did. So this is imperfect. They do not always have the best information. Yes, that's why we consulted. I agree with that. They do not always have the best information. They are not always the experts. That's why we consulted with 1,500 people and told the governments, look, internet governance is not so important. However, I'm sure they will not care and will put it in anyways, and there are various reasons for that, and I think that's not a contamination. I think that's good that they do that. So I think this is, this play between, I don't know, nobody has the truth. No. So all you can do in to govern is to take a little bit of everything, I think.
Thank you. I had the opportunity to attend the meeting in Buenos Aires. And I know that for each goal to be reached, you are organizing working groups, right? In case of one can be interested in participate of these working groups related to interest areas, how can I do, if possible, to join?
First of all, well, that was in the, thank you very much for the question. In the old action plan, in the ELAC 2007, there have been working groups, 10 working groups. Now, in the new action plan, in the ELAC 2010, we still don't know if there will be working groups or not. Because the idea is much more that the existing projects, which ICA and IDRC and UNESCO and IDB and the other ones and APC and Alfaredi and all of them have, that they are the ones who are actually the working groups. Because we found out that doing specific working groups were not really necessary. What the working groups did is they went to the e-government network of Redke Alk to work with them. So basically, they already exist. And what is the idea of this action plan? This action plan does not have a cent. It does not have any funds. It's not like E-Europe where you say, well, you have the E-Europe action plan and here you have 20 billion euros to implement. No, nobody has this money. We don't have them. So actually what this action plan is, it is coordinating the activities which are already ongoing. Now, if you coordinate the Inter-American Development Bank with United Nations and with the Organization of American States, which are all doing pretty much the same, then you might get synergies out of that. And this will save you resources to do new projects. So that's the idea behind the action plan. So the action plan, these working groups, we're not sure if that will continue because basically we saw it's much more efficient to just to work with what's already there. And there are a lot of activities in Latin America already ongoing, right? It's just not, the coordination just needs to be improved. Más preguntas, comentarios, críticas.
Las reuniones preparatorias
sí.
Fueron abiertas a todo el público, o sea, alguien, por ejemplo, que trabaje, no sé, en una organización no gubernamental participó o solamente estuvo cerrada a gobierno.
¿En cuál, en estas encuestas, en los cuestionarios o en las?
Sí, porque tengo entendido que para las diferentes rondas Delphi anteriormente, antes de darse las reuniones, cada estado definía quién iba a ser su focus, su punto focal. Exactamente. Entonces, me planteaba ahorita, escuchando la pregunta aquí de la amiga, ciertamente recuerdo que en el 2005 hubo participación muy abierta para hacer el ILAC 2007.
Para implementar
para, el plan. Exactamente, para llegar a la conclusión, bueno, este va a ser el plan de acción regional. Me preguntaba ahorita, bueno, para hacer todo esto fue las consultas, si mal no recuerdo, iban más hacia la parte gubernamental. ¿Cómo fue la participación de...?
No, ahí no, este no tiene mucho que ver con la... this doesn't have anything, not a lot to do with the implementation of ELAC 2007. We did not consult the focal... One is the working groups and the focal points that have implemented the old action plan, and the other one is this consultation we did. And what you see here is the participation of the public sector was very little, 25%. So the large majority came from private sector and academic sector to answer this questionnaire. And this, actually, we do not know who that was. They just answered anonymously, right? Más preguntas.
I came here because the gender meeting was canceled.
Good for me.
And I came late. And I came in late, and I was wondering if you had any questions or any analysis based on gender differences.
Yes, gender is actually a priority that came into the new priorities, the gender perspective. Gender is a very interesting question because it came in here, but as a priority area, it's a very, very special point with the gender. We had a long discussion about that. So gender came in as a priority area, such as e-commerce and intellectual property rights. Now we started to, as a new priority area that did not exist explicitly in the old action plan. So then we went out to make interviews with these 106 people to ask them, so well, what are the policy options? What do you want to do in gender inclusion for ICT? And not a lot came back. There were no good policies, really. The policies were more, we do education with a gender perspective. We do health with a gender perspective. We do public access center with a gender perspective. But only gender was not really... Well, at least this group of 106 people were not able to elaborate. And we worked a lot with the gender networks also. We worked with them, we consulted with them. And it was more like, put the gender perspective on education, put it on health, put it on public access, put it on training. But no, standalone, there was no gender policy option really. So right now, what is in the draft right now is that the gender perspective is included in many of the other goals, but there's not one specific goals that says gender. It says public access with a specific consideration of the gender perspective. It says training with a specific perspective on. So that is actually what happened after the discussions, that the gender perspective is more emerged into all, it has to be emerged in all other activities. So that was very interesting to see that. Yeah, all of them are ICT, of course, yes. All of them are ICT, yes. Well, okay, if there are no more questions, I thank you very much for your attention. You can find this Delphi study in our webpage, in cepaloeclac.org, soginfo. And... you can also write me if you have any question or talk now, and thank you very much for your attention.